the Scottish Football Podcast from BBC Radio Scotland.
Welcome to the show. We're joined this evening by Paul Hartley, Graeme Speer, Stuart Cosgrove and Michael Stewart. If you want your say tonight, please get in touch. Text us 80295 on Twitter at BBC Sportsound. Tweet me at BBC Kenny Mac or give us a call 0500 92 95 00. Let's kick off with Rangers, Graeme, and news that seems to have gone down well with a majority of Rangers fans. Finance Director Brian Stockbridge has left the club.
Yeah, and it doesn't surprise me, and I think it was expected, Kenny, and I think it was probably deserved. I wrote a column about 3 months ago in the Herald saying I think Brian Stockbridge should leave after the disastrous financial performance of the club in the last financial year to the summer of 2013. Made all the worse, I might add, when the results came out by Brian Stockbridge indicating that the performance had been good. The financial results had been good, and that progress was made at a time when Rangers were hemorrhaging money alarmingly. Now, I know there's a counter-argument to this. I've spoken to Ian Hart and other people at Rangers. Brian Stockbridge inherited the greed culture, the grasping culture put in place at Rangers by Charles Green, whereby bonuses would be paid, big bonuses would be given out to Green, to Stockbridge himself, to other people. Big IPO costs would be given out, which I think a lot of people have found very dodgy around Rangers. My one note of sympathy with Brian Stockbridge was he had to honour these costs, he had to preside over these costs and somehow just put up with them. But in terms of his performance as finance director, very poor, and I don't have much sympathy for him in terms of losing his job, in terms of how well he's performed, because he's not performed.
Despite all the problems, Stuart, all the comings and goings in the boardroom, Stockbridge managed to see it out for a very lengthy period.
Yeah, longer than I thought he could, because he became, if not isolated, he certainly became, for many Rangers fans, the kind of toxic sort of personification of things that were wrong at the club, and he managed to stay despite inordinate amounts of pressure. I principally agree with Graham. Where I'd probably add another thought is that Graham said that he inherited some of these from the Charles Green regime. In fact, all of them were inextricably connected to the Zeus Capital consortia that was at the core of the purchase of Rangers.
For whom he also worked, yeah.
For whom he also worked. And what's therefore clear, and I think this is what Graham was hinting at, that group of people have never really been clear about the transparency of ownership of all of the shares of Rangers, many of which still now exist with what were once rather flatteringly referred to as institutional investors, but in actual fact clearly are offshore trusts, highly disguised corporate vehicles and whatever. And I think that what we now need to see at Rangers is not simply let's call for heads in the case of Stockbridge, but rather a much greater era of transparency of ownership. Who exactly are the key shareholding people that own Rangers? And I think there needs to be a much greater clarity between the relationship between the holding company and, if you like, the football board, as it's often referred to, because I think therein lies an awful lot of things that are yet unknown about Rangers.
A crucial part of Graham Wallace's plans, Paul, is cutting Ali McCoy's playing budget. What do you make of the squad that's been assembled and the money it's cost to do that?
Well, I think they've got a good enough squad to compete in the first division, that's for sure. They've got the biggest budget. They're the only club that's full-time. They've got the best players. And they should be winning the league at a canter, that's for sure. They should be seeing teams out every week. With a wee bit of a struggle today, but in terms of the budget, compared to the rest of the teams in that division, it's enormous.
Graham Wallace said this week, Michael, that Ali McCoy knows exactly the budgets, the financial situation at the club. But you were told this week that's not the case.
Words to those effect. I had a phone call from Mr. McCoy on Monday afternoon. He wasn't best pleased with some things that I'd written. To be honest, I don't really understand to this day what it was that he was concerned about. But he relayed to me that he wasn't involved in finances at the club, and I was unaware of these things, which, you know, does seem to be slightly sitting contradictory to what, you know, Graham Wallace has said this week.
Just on that, I mean, the quotes from Graham Wallace this week, Ali McCoy's knows the magnitude of the financial challenge. He and I have had that conversation. We're in sync.
Well, I mean, that's the way I would have thought things would have worked. You know, the manager at the club, you know, especially somebody like Ali McCoy, who obviously holds a huge sway with the support and is a huge figure at the club. That was what I had said to him. I said that my belief was that if he wanted to be involved in the finances, then he would be. And I feel it's become slightly convenient for him to, you know, put his hands up and say that's nothing to do with me and distance himself from that.
Did he have a go?
I wasn't the best pleased, but I said, listen, you know, that's just my opinion and my take on things, and, you know, he's entitled to his opinion. You know, it was the classic, we agreed to disagree.
Is it commonplace, Graham, for managers to pick me? It was in following on when Michael said things in this programme, he wrote an article in The Sun on Monday. Is
which,
it commonplace?
Was in no way, you know, demeaning towards him. You know, it was more to do with the fact that the executives at the club, like everybody's spoken about, are the real culprits here and they're the ones that should be, you know, held accountable for it.
I think this situation has been particularly difficult for Ali McCoist, Kenny, and these endless leaks that are coming out of Rangers. Some of the leaks are quite damaging, potentially, to Ali. Now, we have to be careful how we speak about this. I think some of the stuff that's coming out looks quite genuine, but some of the stuff about Ali McCoy's salary, allegations of him being forced to take a salary cut, dragging his feet over the issue, being concerned about what the fans might think. In other words, wanting things differently in private to how they appear to be in public. I think that disconnection between the public perception and the private reality potentially can be quite embarrassing for Ali McCoist. I mean, his salary, which is not really his fault, has clearly been absurd, bordering on obscene for the job he's doing. It should be nothing like that, although that salary was offered to him. But some of the stuff that's circulating around it is quite damaging. I have to say, I've known Ali McCoist for 20 years. I've found him a very decent, approachable guy. But in terms of his, as you're saying, Michael, his feigning of not really knowing much of the finance situation going on behind the scenes at the club, I find that very difficult to believe. He's disbelieved to a certain extent on what he knows about the finances, and possibly more key in terms of the way his team is playing on the pitch, the way he's gone about the squad, the way he's packed it with kind of, you know, mediocre SPL players to just soldier their way through the divisions. Their unconvincing football. I think a lot of Rangers fans also, some doubt him as a football manager. And these are two problems he's got to contend with.
Yeah, and the biggest one is obviously the one that's on the pitch, really, you know, from a managerial perspective. Because all the rest of the stuff that we're talking about off the field, you can say, you know, to a certain extent, yep, okay, that isn't your dominion and things like that. Even though, you know, I think that with the past couple of years, the way things have gone, and because he's such a big figure, he maybe should be saying, I want to know a bit more here.
I wonder if it's possible that any modern manager, particularly one that's been remunerated to that level, knows nothing of the finances of the club. That strikes me as being implausible. And where Ali McCoist or were any intelligent manager in any walk of life, in any industry, to be on that kind of salary, I think that they would have to know about the economic realities.
If he keeps going on, if Ali McCoist keeps going on, we've had great discussions with Graham Wallace. We've had discussions behind the scenes. I'm fully aware of how acute the situation is. If he keeps making these pronouncements, yep, it's inconceivable, yep, he does not have a handle on the finances at the club and how difficult they are and how potentially awkward the publication of his salary of $850,000 a year, $16,000 a week, to progress past these part-time butchers and postmen in the lower division. It's inconceivable that he would be worried about that and he would not find them embarrassing. But no disrespect to clubs like Aloha Paul.
Shocking the way that he patronised postmen there.
Yeah. Notice I don't talk about theological professors, do I? I make them to be butchers and bakers and all that kind of stuff.
Does anybody still make candlesticks in Scotland?
But look at the position Ali McCoy is saying. I mean, even last week, the players said they weren't going to accept this pay cut. He stood by his players, and that immediately, you'd imagine, drives a wedge between him and his board. Another wedge, perhaps.
Yeah, but I think he has to stick by his players in terms of getting offered wage cuts. I don't think the players should have to take a wage cut. They're not entitled to. They've been given contracts, and they should see their contracts for what it is. But
who were the Riccarton three?
Nothing to do with me.
How would you describe the relationship between Ali McCoist and his board right now?
Probably a bit strained, because I think there's a feeling that because Ali knows how to talk the talk in public and with journalists and making public pronouncements. And I suspect some people, whether it's Graham Wallace or the chairman, David Summers, or Norman Crichton, or some of these other characters that have come in, I suspect they view his understanding of the situation of the club to be very different behind the scenes. So I think they probably find Ali knows how to do the talk in public, and to a degree he does. I mean, listen, I've sat in press conferences with Ali McCoist for 20 years. I've said before, I think he's a good guy. But Ali knows how to work his ticket in public. He knows how to make public statements, and he knows what to conceal and what not to say. And on that, having that gift, I don't begrudge him that. He's in a hell of a difficult situation.
And he's, you know, over the past couple of years, he's, as Graham says, he knows how to work it. He knows how to get public opinion on in his favour, and to turn the pressure up on, you know, guys that he's been, you know, for example, Charles Green, things like that. Whenever he feels like the pressure behind the scenes is on him, he knows how to, you know, turn it and to put the focus on it elsewhere. And I think at the moment with Graham Wallace, they're everything in public, you know, they're saying the right words. But I think that you know, as Graham sort of mentioned there's clearly a bit of a divide. And you know, Ali's this, I think today I saw him talking about, I'm sure that the chief executive will speak to Dave King about reinvesting in the club. But you know, Graham Wallace has already come out and said that that's not something that they're looking to do. They want to try and get the base of the business, you know, self-sufficient before they go to investors. So these sort of disconnects and these contradicting views are slightly difficult to justify, really.
Frank in Glasgow has called in 0500 92 95 00. Thanks for the call, Frank. You've got a point to make on Ali McCoist.
It is, yes, guys. Good evening. My point basically is, for years now, especially the last 2 years, we've been spoon-fed from an ever salivating press, which Ali seems to control very much, as pals in the press, that Ali is the man who's taken Rangers through troubled times, and he's, you know, he's a man that's steered the club, whatever. I can't believe that the Rangers fans actually buy this nonsense. And I think sensible Rangers fans that I talked to have seen through Ali McCoist a long time ago. Ali McCoist has shown absolutely no leadership. If you look back and all the people from Craig White to Green and up to the present guy, Ali's like your nodding dog in the back shelf of a car. He nods and agrees with whatever the incumbent leader of the club says. He shows no direction to the fans. He shows no leadership. He takes the money. And I'll say with Ali yet again, like many people, if you want to know the true measure of someone, follow the money. Just follow the money.
Frank, hang on a minute. Do you know what? I think we've said what we've said. I think you're really overstating it there. That's quite a character assassination of...
What, about salivating journalists?
Has he got a point?
Well, listen, that's I've made that point 5 minutes ago. Follow the money and all this kind of stuff. I mean, that sounds dodgy kind of stuff. I mean...
No. I think that what Frank's meaning is that you started this show by focusing on Stockbridge and saying the amount of money that disappeared from this club in this era that Stockbridge was the financial director. And if you follow that money, a reasonably significant amount of it has gone to the club manager.
No, I think there's a big difference.
That you talked about and the penny shares that he was
given as
part of the deal.
How can you hold those two thoughts in your head, Graham? I'll tell you how, because I think the culture of greed and grasping put in by Charles Green and the boardroom structure there was wrong, and it profited more than anyone Charles Green. It was going to profit Brian Stockbridge, some of these other characters, Imran Ahmed and others that came in. The point about Ali is different. Ali wasn't the institutor of these things. He was the recipient. He was offered this salary. The salary, I think, was obscene, was wrong, but frankly, if you're offered it, you're kind of duty-bound to take it.
I would agree with that.
Stuart,
I'm not sure I agree with that.
Stuart, the BBC say to you, for off the ball, we're going to pay you 200k a year, and you say
they
look,
don't, and
you,
they
and
wouldn't,
and you say I think that's obscene. I'd rather take 60k a year for it.
I think honestly, I think you're wrong about that. I think there's an awful lot of people that look at the business that they work for. I happen to be employed by Channel 4, which is a billion turnover business, considerably bigger than Rangers, and not a single person, not even the chief executive, is anywhere close to Ali McCoy's salary. It's utterly ridiculous.
I'm not sure that's a fair analogy. I've hardly heard a football manager in Britain or anywhere say to a chairman, Mr. Chairman, by the way, I think you're offering me far too much money. I'd rather take 40%.
Frank, you want to come back in?
I wouldn't mind, yeah. Graham, you seem to make these points at the start of the show and then you do an exceedingly good job at putting into reverse gear.
I don't. It's because you're grossly overstating it.
Graham, please let me speak.
Okay.
You seem to say the right things and I think you then get frightened. I think you then get frightened because you're too near the truth. And I think you're too near the truth because that facing that truth is quite a daunting thing in this country. And the fact is, Graham, this is a man, Ali McCoy, who for years has told us everybody must take stock at this club. Everybody must look seriously at their role in this club. The club's on their knees. We need to save the club. Save the club. Thousands of times we heard Ali saying that. Meantime, Ali has taken just short of £1 million out of a club that's on its knees. Now, Graham, you can make this the argument that, oh, Ali just took what he was given. Do you not think, and you used the word obscene correctly, Graham, do you not think for a manager, and let's be honest, I don't believe Ali is like somebody with a blindfold on it just gets, walking.
No, I've made that point, yeah.
Right, well, then you must accept the fact that obscenity in a wage, he must know that he's taking an obscene wage.
Well,
Let Frank finish. Yes, Frank?
He has taken an obscene amount of money from a club that he loves, which is on its knees, and he's pontificated to others that who are in charge, taking cheques here and there and all the rest of it. Meanwhile, Ali's taken almost £1 million, probably bonuses, etc., £1 million a year from that club. Now, I'm sorry, Graham, at the end of the day, Ali's not a poor guy. Ali could easily survive on £200,000 a year, but Ali quietly, and thanks very much, chaps. Trouser almost.
Right, Frank, I'll let Michael come in because he wants to make the point. All I would say to you is you and I disagree purely on degrees. I made the point. I've called his salary obscene repeatedly on this programme. I think he could have taken a third or a quarter of the salary. But my disagreement with you is to a point of degree.
Right.
I think you really overstated.
Michael, you were nodding your head.
Well, yeah, to be honest, Frank, Michael Stewart here, and sometimes when you come out with outlandish statements or what people perceive to be outlandish statements, you get shot down. But I would have to agree with the majority of what you've got to say there. I think that it becomes a stage where it's incumbent on somebody that professes to be in the position that he does that he needs to actually stand up and actions speak louder than words at times, and I think that Graham's is right on the aspect of the salary. The salary is offered to you, you take it, but there's a lot of extra things there that don't sit well with a lot of people, and I've got to be honest and say that I agree with the majority of what you've got to say there, Frank.
Michael, can I just make a quick point here? My main point here when I come on was the lack of leadership from McCoy. And this leadership could have manifested itself in him standing and saying, sorry, guys, you're offering me an obscene amount of money here that this league doesn't merit, I don't merit, the situation the club's in does not merit. That lack of fundamental, basic, it's not rocket science, basic leadership from a manager who continually tells that the club's in its knees,
in this principled world and leadership, quote me any other manager in British football of your knowledge who was offered a salary, a good, decent, lucrative salary by the club, and he said, with all due respect, I've got a sense of decency, I'd rather take 50% of that offer.
I'll answer that, Graham, but you tell me another club that's been liquidated, a new club started, they then are on their knees within months because people have been trousering money left
right. Yeah.
The club's on its knees.
Yeah, okay.
And that's a different situation.
Right. I'll answer your question, right, and you answer mine. Name an example.
No,
you're
not
else.
What he's saying is the circumstances that are in here are unique.
Do you know, I was just going to say that, I mean, this all comes back to the fundamental issue of, for far too long at Rangers, prior to, you know, green and white and everything like that, the culture has been take, take, take. There's not been the idea of what can I give to the club, and it just needs to change, and it's still continuing to this day. And I think that Graham Wallace, I think from what we've seen so far, he seems to be a man of some, you know, a man of some standing that isn't going to, you know, stand for this any longer. And I think that that's been long overdue at Rangers, and that attitude needs to change, and it needs to change fast.
Thanks totally for the call, agree. Frank. Does he get an easy time from the media, Alan McCoys?
I think over the years he has done.
Yeah. Did he mark your card this week? Did he mark your card this week? Did he just say pressure on the media?
He just said, listen, he wasn't happy, and he says, if you continue, we'll have words. But listen, that does not bother me in the slightest. My opinion is separate to whatever anyone else is trying to say to me.
I can testify to the fact that he does get an easy ride. I'm a frontline witness. I've been there for 15, 20 years. Alan McCoist is very, very well disposed to the media. He helps them out. He tries to look after them. He's chatty. He's affable.
He's a personable person.
You guys at the BBC know that. Now, if that's the situation, you're not going to get hordes of newspaper men going away and filleting him in print. Of course, he gets a gentle ride from the media.
Paul, I mean, surely we've got to take into account with Alan McCoist the pressure that goes with that job, the demands. Your one defeat, it's all over the back pages. The expectations of 40,000 plus fans every second week to deliver a performance.
Yeah, I think so. I think there's massive pressure when you're at the either Old Firm as a manager. It's about winning performances. You know what the crowd are going to say if you don't win. Understand what they're saying about his salary, but he was given that contract in front of him. And you're right, nobody else would turn that down. But I think that they're missing a point in terms. I think you feel for the supporters now. It seems to be something new every week, and you've got to remind them it's about football. You've tried to get a football team on the park, and I think that's been forgot about with Rangers in terms of the finance and that.
Is he an easy target, Alan McCoys?
Well, I think that increasingly in the world of social media, he takes an awful lot more stick online than he takes in the printed page of that, there's no doubt. But one thing that, and I think it's not a simple comparison, and I'm sure, as Graham would say, there's elements of degrees of this, but Scotland national managers, when they've been underperforming, have been utterly pilloried by the Scottish press, irrespective of how personable they are. Yeah. And for some reason, Ali McCoist has managed to avoid that.
The classic example of that was Bertie Vokes. Mm-hmm. Criticising Bertie Vokes was like kicking a dead dog. Yeah. I mean, there was no comeback at all.
The accusation
was that when the Scottish press criticised Vokes, it was dead easy. Did they apply the same kicking methods to Walter Smith? Yep. Not a chance.
I think that was maybe because he was a foreigner, Michael.
Possibly coming in. But the difference is as well, Walter Smith was a good manager. He got results.
Very good manager.
Ultimately, it comes down to getting results. And my big concern with Rangers as well is that, you know, you take your hat off and you say they've racked up the points. That's great. But as Paul pointed out earlier, their wage bill far outweighs the rest of the teams. I mean, you know, everybody talks about the sledgehammer cracking on, you know, a walnut and all that sort of stuff, and it's relevant. They should be battering these teams, but they're not doing it well enough. They don't have a style of play.
I think the average wage bill in that division for the rest of the teams is about 100 grand in terms of the playing budget.
And there's a 7 million,
Are they progressing as they should be under Alan McCoist?
As a football team? No chance. No danger. The games I've seen, they have been terrible.
Why?
Because they've got no style of play. It just, listen, when I watch a team, you can see a team that is well coached. You can see a team that's worked on the shape, the formation, the passages of play, the style they've got. A team that doesn't have anything worked on, it reverts back to a default setting of lump it up to a big striker. And that's what Rangers do.
What are you hearing from people within Rangers?
You didn't have to hear anything. You can see it with your own two eyes. But, I mean, I've spoke to previous players that have been at the club as well. And, you know, the word was that, you know, the training was very, you know, standard. There wasn't anything exceptional getting worked on.
There are Rangers supporters who watch the team week in, week out for the last 15, 18 months, Kenny. And there's a lot of convincing voices out there, you know, not the lunatic fringe, convincing voices who think the football team is not progressing, it's got no style of play, it's laboured. A lot of people say, as you say, Michael, accuse him of playing Route 1, but they don't find Alan McCoist convincing as a manager. I must say, I know this is going to be depicted as an Alan McCoist feeding frenzy. I remember an SPL manager saying to me last year, you look at Rangers under Alan McCoist, they don't play like a coached team. And I always remember that comment.
A top-flight manager said that to you?
A top flight manager said to me, when I look at Rangers, I can tell by looking at them, they are not a very well coached team. That's what he said.
Well, Alex Hood has got in touch with the programme. He says, McCoy's lack of leadership, where has Frank been? That's Frank, the previous caller. For the past 2 years, McCoy is the reason Rangers are still here. Jimmy in Glasgow is on the line, 0500 92 95 00. Thanks for calling, Jimmy. You were at the game at Ibrox today.
Yep. How are you doing? Who's it? Is it Graham, Michael and Kenny?
Yeah, Paul Hartley's in here, Stuart Paul, Cosgrove.
How are you doing, Stuart, Paul? Right, I was at the game of the 46 years been going to see the Gers. I'm just wondering what Ali McCoy's is up to at all. I listened to his press conference there, guys, and he must have been sitting watching a different game from what we were all watching. No, he's saying that Arbroath made it hard for us today. We made it hard for us, and we made Arbroath look good. Now, Kenny, you said there about training and that. Well, you're right, mate. We don't look like a team that has come up with any decent ideas on the training ground and taking them onto the park. This lumping the big high ball way up to John Daly, etc., isn't it the football I want to watch? Now, a team like Rangers should never, ever have to come back twice against a team like Arbroath. And I'm not being disrespectful to Arbroath, because we are what we are, a full-time team in the third tier of Scottish football. And we're 23 points ahead, guys, in the league, and rightly so because of the budget we've got. But the football is rank rotten to watch. We can win 5-0, 6-0, it's still rubbish to watch.
Jimmy, Michael Stewart here. Listen, I mean, you're only saying what, you know, thousands of others have previously said. And again, I would agree with you that, you know, the games I've seen so far this season, there is no strategy, there's no idea. And Rangers, you know, starting again at the bottom tier of the Scottish football, had a perfect opportunity to develop a style of play. And unfortunately, that opportunity has been lost. And I think it comes down to the fact that, I remember watching the Dunfermline game a couple of weeks ago, and, you know, the celebrations that Ali McCoy...
Not a good goal.
What's that?
Neistat just scored again there, sorry.
The celebrations from the manager and the coaching staff when they scored against Dunfermline, they were so excited, and of course they will be, but it gave me an insight into... It's almost as if they're nervous against these lesser teams
but
slipping
Michael,
up.
Why should they be nervous? Well,
listen, that's exactly what I'm saying, Jimmy, that they shouldn't be. That they are at a level where they should be going out, and with all due respect to the other teams, they shouldn't even be giving them a single moment's thought.
Of course, and that's we're going to Ibrox now and we're coming up against these teams. And I say, even the teams that were beat 5-1, we beat Arbroath 5-1 last time out, Michael.
Yeah.
And it was but you know, it still wasn't even a good game. The atmosphere was flat. You know, and I mean,
it's not getting the fans off their seats.
No, it's not getting the fans off their seats. I say we are where we are because of what's happened, and that's fine. So let's try and get on with it. But some of the players who think they're prima donnas, and they're rubbish players. I mean, guys like Ian Black, Peralta, they're rubbish. I mean, I've heard people in the paper saying, and in another media outlet saying that we were all pleased with Ian Black. I'll give you my take on Ian Black. See, the day when I was sitting watching Ian Black kick 10 shades of you-know-what, Nikola Jelovic, he was smiling, he was caught in camera smiling, because he's a dirty player. And I, when Rangers bought him, I thought, what do we want him for? We saved Ian Black's career and a few others. John Daly, okay, he can score goals and that. But my boy,
he's
6'7", he could probably score goals like John Daly. And I'm not saying that tongue-in-cheek. The fact of the matter is, come the start of April, May, guys, we're going to be asked the way Mr. Easdale's talking, a possible 20% increase in season tickets to watch Dross. Well, I'm telling you, the Dross that's in there, the new, is going to struggle against better teams next season, mostly full-time teams.
Well, Jimmy, Lee McCulloch, the Rangers captain, said this week the gap between League One and the Premiership is marginal.
Aye, he must be eating magic mushrooms or something. Right, because, I mean, I don't care if he's a Rangers captain. There's no way. Look, see if Rangers can get by Falkirk the next round of the Scottish Cup, guys. I'm hoping that we don't get any of the top four, like Celtic, Motherwell, Aberdeen, Dundee United, and possibly even Hibs. Because you know something? We play the way we've been playing week in, week out, even getting results. We will get a wellion. And that's what's going to happen. That's what maybe it's going to take for the wake-up call for a lot of people who are on the phones and on newspapers saying, you've got to give Ali a chance. 18 and a half months is enough chance.
Well, Jimmy, stay on the phone. Joe in Edinburgh, another Rangers fan, is on the line. Thanks for calling in, Joe. Do you agree with Jimmy?
I'm just absolutely astounded at the stick that Ali is getting at the moment, to be honest with you.
I've been watching Rangers for the last 40 years, and as a player, fantastic, a legend, obviously. I know times have been tough recently, and I just think the fans and other players, ex-players, whatever you want to call them, need to get real. We've been in a bad place, and we're still in a bad place.
Can I ask Joe a question?
Yeah, on you go, Jimmy.
How you doing, Joe? All right, pal. Right. I'm a Gers fan, a 40-year standing and all, but can you not honestly say, mate, in a hand and heart, I mean, Ali McCoist is a legend at Ibrox. We know that. We've been and seen him score. But come on now, you can't honestly say that you're sitting there enjoying watching what we're watching in our home and away.
No, and I understand what you're saying, Paul, but listen, it's a results business at the end of the day, and all right, it was pretty dire today. I was the other day, and I have to admit, it was pretty bad. But the result is what matters for me. We won the game, and we're progressing towards...
Jimmy,
just a second, it's Michael here. Joe,
we are progressing. If we win this league, then obviously next year that takes care of itself. The year after that, we'll be back in the top flight.
And what that, and Joe, and Joe, does that just take care of itself as well? You know, there comes a stage where it's, you know, you're actually got to be building something here, and all you're doing here is just papering over the cracks. And you're just building up towards getting back into the top flight, and then all of a sudden it's going to be a reality check in terms of, hold on a minute, we're actually not good enough.
But Michael, we're not good enough now, pal. I understand that.
So if you're not good enough just now, then surely is that not, you know, a fault of the manager slightly?
No, we're good enough for where we are now, and obviously the league position proves that. We're good enough where we are now. I know times are tough. We took our medicine, blah blah blah. Let's get on with it. But listen, we will be back in the top flight.
But Joe, it was Ali McCoist that went out and bought the players. No anybody else. It wasn't Craig White, and it wasn't Charles Green, right? And it wasn't Stockbridge, right? It was Ali McCoist that went and picked these players.
Yes,
so you've got to give Ali McCoist blame. And you can't absolve him of all blame. You must say, wait a minute, you're the guy that brought Black to the team. You're the guy that brought Peralta to the team. Right, you're the guy that brought John Daly to the team. I mean, guys like Lewis McLeod, great player. Young boy.
We're going to have to leave it there, Jimmy. We're going to have to leave it there, Jimmy and Joe. Thanks very much indeed for your calls. Two Rangers fans with contrasting opinions there. Paul, I want your opinion. You've managed in the third tier. You've obviously played in the top flight. What did you make of Lee McCullough's comments?
No, I definitely think there's a big gap between the Premiership and the third tier of Scottish football. On a one-off, then, they could beat the top flight team. But I think over a season, there's definitely a big gap in terms of the quality. I was at the Aberdeen-Motherwell game today, and it was a great game. It was full of quality. Good players, good young players, good passing. Two teams that knew that we were doing in terms of how they play and a style of play. Aberdeen sort of played 4-3-3. Motherwell went 4-4-2. But in terms of how they play and good attractive football, and that's what supporters want to see. I think especially Rangers fans, they want to go and see their team win in style.
I think that it's a great pub conversation that Lee McCullough let loose, because it's one of those ones that where you can always offer, contradictions. I mean, probably the one this year is Morton back to the wall performance at Parkhead, knocking Celtic out of the cup. A one-off, obviously, because they then have a shocking season in their own league. So it's a good pub talking point, but there's one measurement where I think Lee fails, and that's to look at the amount of goals that Lee McCullough scored in the SPL and the amount of goals he scored in the division he's in now. There is a marked difference.
Right, just finally on this, you were talking earlier on, you were saying to the first caller, Frank in Glasgow, Graham, you were saying to him, tell me one other manager that's taken a pay cut, you know, that would say, look, I shouldn't get paid that salary. According to Paul in Aberdeen, Ed Skodal took a pay cut of £100,000 whilst at Petardia. I'm not sure that's true or not, but according to Paul.
Fine, but I'm sure it's a relative rarity for these managers to go around knocking about. I mean, but we agree, the salary was, I don't know how many times I've said it, the whole financial direction of Rangers has been a basket case. We agree on that.
Lots to get through tonight. I want to talk about the game at Fir Park. Paul Hartley was here this afternoon. So get your calls in to Sports and Extra. The number is 0500 92 95 00.
The Six Nations. It's not just about rugby.
It's about rivalry.
Everything riding on this game. Lose, you're staring at the abyss.
It's about nations.
A bit of pride there. That's what they're living off at this moment in time.
Your nation.
Into the corner!
Because our fiercest rivals
are those who are closest.
A monumental game for the nation.
This is hard-edged rugby.
The Six Nations starts next Saturday afternoon
across the BBC.
Right, so let's switch our attention, Paul, to the game you were at Fir Park today. It sounded an absolute cracker on sports, and Scott McDermott has got in touch. Disappointed Motherwell fan heading home after 2 points dropped. Nielsen sold the game again. A terrible goalkeeper. Colin Bell, Aberdeen fully deserved the point. Handball or no handball, it would have been daylight robbery to lose that game. Were you impressed with the standard of the game?
Very much so. I thought Aberdeen were excellent. They deserved a point. In terms of how they play, they've got really good energy and pace from middle to front. The likes of Pollock, McGinn, Flood, Jack in there. I thought it was a right good game of football. Aberdeen dominated the second half. Real good width about their play. They could have scored a few goals, and Rooney gets a debut goal. It was a real striker's goal. I think it was Flood that hits a shot. The keeper parries it. And the first to anticipate is the striker, Rooney, and I'm sure he'll do well for him. But it's a real good game of football. It's the third time I've seen Aberdeen Motherwell this year, and it's been three good games.
But when you look at the two squads, are you surprised that Motherwell are keeping up with Aberdeen?
Yeah, they've got a very thin squad. They've not got much strength and depth, and I think Stuart McCall's done a terrific job there. Ever since the Albion Rovers result, they've came on leaps and bounds. Yeah. And looks like a two-horse race to finish second, but I'm really impressed by Aberdeen this year. I think Derek McInnes has bought very wisely. He's got a bit of experience and youth in his squad.
Aberdeen's achievement so far, I sort of predicted this because I thought that McInnes would make a difference. But I have to say that I thought that when Motherwell lost what was effectively the spine of their team in the close season, I thought they would be massively difficult players to replace. You know, Higdon, and you go through them all, the players that they lost. But they seem to have been able to replace them, if not to the same standard, at least a standard to be able to compete at this level. I think maybe they in terms of the keeper, which I think was the point of the caller contributor there,
yeah.
You know, losing Randolph was obviously, I think he was one of the best, if not the best keeper in the SPL, and to lose him, and he's not been wholly replaced, but I think McCall's done a phenomenal job turning that club around in the short time he's had.
Yeah, I mean, it's been a continual thing with Stuart McCall. You know, he's almost had to rebuild the team two or three times, and he's maintained a consistent level where they're competing at the top of the top of the league. So huge credit's got to go to Stuart McCall, and you know, also to Derek McInnes, who has, you know, very, very quickly turned around the fortunes of Aberdeen. And I think a lot of us predicted that after his his pre-season signings. You could see that there was a real, you know, there was a real grit and determination to those players that were brought in, and they have enabled the youngsters to go from strength to strength, because you need that balance. You know, you need those good experienced players to create a winning mentality, and the youngsters pick up off of it. And you know, Paul was just mentioning there, you had Pollitt and Jack and you know, these guys that were you know, at the fore today. And I think the real credit's got to go to the experienced guys like Robson and Flood, Anderson, these sort of guys that will set the tone at the club, and they almost do the manager's work in the changing room for them.
Yeah, you can imagine very, very high standards set by Derek McInnes at Aberdeen right now.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I don't want to keep banging on about Derek McInnes, but I was chuffed to bits when he got the Aberdeen job. I thought he and Aberdeen would make a great combination. I have to say, Kenny, I don't think Derek McInnes will be taking anything for granted. They drew today, they lost last week. They're going great guns. I think Adam Rooney will be a great signing for them. But after the difficult experience Derek McInnes had down in Bristol, I think he'll be taking this decidedly week at a time. I actually think Derek McInnes is very wary of the great Aberdeen revival that we talk about. And we all admire him in this studio. Yep. I really rate the guy. But I think he'll be saying, guys, just hang fire. I drew today, I lost last week. In other words, he's taking 1 point from the last six. Of course he's restored the club. I think he's got real substance as a manager, but I want to see how it pans out over the next couple of seasons.
Well, of course, you know, the next couple of seasons, but there's an absolute certainty that they'll be challenging for second place. There's no doubt about that.
It's a two-horse race, so Paul thinks it's a two-horse race. 100%,
100%. But Graham makes a good point there that it will be. I don't think he'll be too anxious this season, because I think there's certainty to be challenging for second. But it's then that second season mentality of, are they going to be able to reenact it and you know, live up to the standards that they've set this season.
Michael, and I know that's something that preys on Derek's mind, because it was the second season at Bristol that was the real difficult one for him.
Michael, I think the next 2 weeks will be a defining moment in the season in terms of the semi-final. Mm-hmm. Yep. Then they go to Parkhead a week later for the Scottish Cup. So
yeah,
if they can get to a final, that'll be
well.
Be
thanks
fantastic.
Very much for that. Well, I sincerely hope they don't.
An Aberdeen fan said to me this week, crowds at Pittodrie are up by 28%. Yeah. Is that right?
I think they're averaging about 12,000-13,000.
I heard another really interesting stat today that I think this is coming up to the Motherwell's 30th anniversary in the top tier.
I heard a portly broadcaster at lunchtime mention that.
That's right, the first time he's made a sensible statement on the show.
Stuart, that was really... When, see, when he What's said it, that was really striking.
Isn't it?
Really
extraordinary.
Striking.
Yeah. Kenny, they had 1,500 fans down the day, Aberdeen, in a terrible afternoon
for
football.
You know the potential of that club.
But as it's been, they're going back to the 80s and Sir Alex and... In terms of the European nights and, mm-hmm. and the trophies, and I think they're just desperate to get to a final.
Yeah, and I think the semi-final that's set up next week, St Johnstone Aberdeen, is going to be great. And another statistic for those people that like to have a go at St Johnstone is that 7% of the population of Perth have bought tickets and only 5% of the population of Aberdeen.
And he another, was looking
and
at you.
And another St Johnstone, yeah. another St Johnstone observation worth making, that a manager with real insight who converted Paul Hartley from a winger to a midfielder
yes.
was called Billy Stark.
The wonderful Billy Stark.
He's got real footballing insight, that man.
It's his greatest achievement. I would not disagree with you.
He knows his stuff, Stark.
Yeah, he really does. He knows his stuff.
Let's talk about
and
him next.
It was the aforementioned Paul Hartley that really discovered Stevie May when he was out on loan to Alloa.
Let's talk about Inverness. A disappointment for them today at Kilmarnock. Was anyone surprised at the appointment of Russell Latipy as number two?
I don't think so. I think he goes back to his Falkirk days and even as a teammate of Yogi's at Hibs. They go back a long time. I know Russell pretty well. I think he's been taking his coaching badges over the last few years. I think he was working with Boa Vista. I think he'd done a little bit of coaching at Falkirk. So I think Yogi trusts him, and that's a big thing for being a manager. You need to trust your number two.
Yeah, I know we like to have a wee laugh at Russell because of all of his various off-field activities, but you tend to forget that he is also one of the most capped internationalists in the world ever, I think. Now, that's partly due with the fact that Trinidad get caps when they're playing in their League Cup, but nonetheless, this guy's got over, you know, a couple of hundred caps for his country. He's been playing for them since, I think, 16-year-old, full international, in tournaments against teams like Mexico, the USA and all the rest of it. Yeah. I think he's a remarkable football player, and I hope he's good
for him. And also, public perception of these guys can be quite, you know, did anyone think shy retiring Jackie McNamara would be a manager? Not many. No. Martin O'Neill said in his younger days when he was geeky, bespectacled, people laughed at him trying to be a manager. Barry Ferguson has just been installed as the caretaker at Blackpool. I mean, 5 years ago, did anyone think Barry Ferguson would be a manager with his antics and all the rest of it?
No.
It happened, you know.
Yeah. I want to talk about your experience as a manager, Paul. Could you now work as a number two if it gave you the foot in the door at a big club?
I think it would be difficult. I like being a manager, or I did like being a manager, sorry, but I do enjoy that, being at the top. I wouldn't enjoy being a number two, but if it's maybe to get back in the game, then who knows? But I do like being a manager. I like being on the touchline. I like being the number one, basically. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about Hearts. A great win for them today. And Alan Preston had a go at me in Sportsland earlier. If you're listening, Alan, I think you're talking complete and utter nonsense.
Alan, I think you were right, whatever it was.
Yeah, I think you're talking...
Stuart didn't know what it was, but
whatever it was, you were right, Alan.
No, I mean, basically, this is something. This is something that Alan was saying, you know, going on about Hearts fans questioning Gary Locke. Now, perhaps they're not real Hearts fans, Alan, I don't know. But lots of Hearts people claiming to be Hearts fans.
How can a Hearts fan not be a proper Hearts fan?
Well, but that's been suggested to me. These people, but Michael, this
Kenny,
is a
you're
point.
Right about
these
that. Michael, we had a bogus caller in here a couple of weeks ago claiming to be a Hearts fan, savaging Gary Locke, and you and I were on the programme, and Hearts people were telling me afterwards, we know that guy, that was a setup.
But,
people
do suggest that people that go onto websites, Twitter and all this, they're not real fans, whatever. Now, lots of people claiming to be Hearts fans get in touch with this programme and told us, Michael, they were not happy at the job being done by Gary Locke. And people like Alan and co seem to be suggesting that we can't talk about the job that Gary Locke's been doing because it's so difficult.
Well, I mean, listen, there's no doubt about it. We've said it, you know, enough, that it's an extremely difficult job. But you can't use that as a shield or an excuse to just have no discussion or conversations about it. Again, you know, I relate it back to the whole sort of Rangers topic, that I look at Hearts and I just don't see that there's a strategy or philosophy in terms of how they're playing. So, you know, that's what I'm basing my opinion on, that I just don't think that, you know, they've obviously picked up a great result today, and, you know, congratulations to the team for doing that.
Good fight back last weekend.
Of course, yeah. But
good second half performance against Motherwell.
Yes, it is. But a lot of it, that I see, it's not by design. It's almost by chance that these things are coming about. And, you know, listen, it's a difficult situation.
It's going to get
relegated, but there needs to be an idea and a philosophy in place of how to actually move the thing forward.
We've spoken about this thing before. We must be allowed to make judgments about Gary Locke's ability. Now, I interviewed Stephen Presley this week ahead of this FA Cup tie at the Emirates last night. Now, he has done amazingly well at Coventry in a very similar situation with a points deduction imposed because of administration. Tell me this. Might Stephen Presley, 5 years more experienced than Gary Locke, might he be doing better at Hearts just now than Gary Locke? I think he might be. Maybe not, but he might be. That's all we have said. The potential to do better.
Well, Alan also said on Sports and Air, he was saying we should be having a go at Alan Archibald because Gary Locke has now won the same amount of games as Partick Thistle. I do remember Alan Archibald saying ahead of when they played Thistle Hearts a few weeks ago, he said, I can't afford to have a player such as Danny Wilson in my squad. You know, don't forget there is some quality there.
Yeah, I mean, there is quality. You know, that there is definite quality in the Hearts squad. But, you know, Hearts will still be bottom of the league. You know, they may well have won the same games as Partick Thistle. And, yeah, Alan Archibald is going through an extremely difficult time. He is. But the thing is with Partick Thistle, you look at them, they're coached. They have a clear idea of how to play football. Yes, they're not getting the results that they need to, but you can see that the manager is working on something there. Unfortunately, when I watch Hearts too often, I don't see that same philosophy or idea coming through.
Yeah, I think obviously Gary Locke's been under a lot of pressure this year in terms of throwing the youngsters into the deep end. They probably aren't ready for the first team. I think maybe you get away with maybe one or two, but they're just not ready to be involved in Hearts' first team just now. But it's the squad of players that he's working with, and he is under... It's under difficult circumstances. I know what you're saying about Partick Thistle. I've seen Partick quite a lot this year, Michael. They do play good football in the terms of, you know, the system they play. The players know what they're doing in terms of the system. I've not seen a lot of Hearts, but I've seen a lot of Partick Thistle. Watched them the other night. They're just not scoring goals.
Yeah, I've seen both clubs on the bounce against St Johnstone, and I felt that Partick Thistle were by far the way the most fluent of the two clubs, and I think whilst there was catastrophic kind of refereeing decisions in the St Johnstone Hearts games, it impacted
in St Johnstone's favour.
Impacted. I would say it impacted on both clubs actually.
Yeah, true,
to be honest,
and
I think that in the end, St Johnstone shot themselves in the foot, and Hearts got the draw. That being said, I felt that there wasn't anything quite as fluent about Hearts as there was with Thistle. So in that sense, I think there is. It's always legitimate. I mean, look, you know, I'm the sort of guy that contradicts Stevie Wonder's third album. I mean, you can always criticise, can't you? That's why you're hired, is it not?
Sure, we're trying to reflect. People get in touch with the programme, and what they were saying was, and we've all said, of course it's a horrendously difficult job Gary Locke's doing. He was in the studio in the summer. He speaks very well. You know he loves, he cares about that club. But the thing is, Stuart, a lot of Hearts fans were getting in touch to say they don't seem to be... Young boys are not young boys. They don't seem to be learning from the mistakes. It's the same mistakes over and over again. And that's what we're discussing.
My point about this is, Kenny, I think for all that we laugh about the lunacy that's out there on social media, you see a lot of perceptive voices of convincing football fans. We've had some Rangers fans on tonight, and I've read Rangers fans talking about how, in their judgment, the football is poor under Alan McCoist. You'll find Hearts fans, we sometimes get accused of soft-soaping it in the media. Fans play hardball and tell you how it is, and there are a lot of Hearts supporters who think the football, even within the context of the players and the limitations of the club, is not good, does not look a well-structured, well-coached team. That, whether they're right or not, it's just a brute fact that they make that point.
Well, I'll give you a perfect example. You know, I look at Hearts and, for example, somebody like Kevin McCarthy, who's got all the attributes to be a really good fullback, but far too often I watch it, he's either too far out and is leaving gaps between himself and the centre half, or he's tucked far too far in, and it leads to opportunities and goals, you know, that are getting conceded by Hearts. That simply can be worked on in training, shape, formation, running through drills, phases of plays, and telling Kevin exactly where he needs to be in every aspect of the game.
I mean, Paul, you were in the studio a couple of weeks ago, and we were talking about Hearts. Billy Brown was on the phone that night, and you were saying that, in your opinion, the boy Patterson is a right back. I think that's what you're saying, that he should be a full back. And someone in the office who's a Hearts fan in the second half against Motherwell, who they played very well, Hearts, said that's one of the best performances by any Hearts player this season, is when Patterson was moved back to his natural position.
Well, that's what he is. He's not a number nine. He's not a centre forward. He's playing out up there, and I feel a bit sorry for him, but it's the squad of players that they've got. But I think he's a right back or down the right hand side. And Michael's talked about young McHattie there. I had him on loan for 6 weeks, and he was terrific. He's a real good player. He's a great prospect, and I definitely think he's one for the future.
Well, a fantastic win for Hearts today, so well done to Gary Locke and to Hearts for that win in Dingwall. Just very briefly, it's very tight now. We talked about this last week, Michael, the battle to avoid the playoff spot. We get Partick Thistle, St Mirren, Ross County. A win for Kilmarnock today, but I guess they're still very much in the mix.
Yeah, of course. I think that we're talking about it being down to two that are chasing second place. It'll definitely be between those four to avoid the playoff spot, and it just adds great excitement to the league. You know, if that playoff spot wasn't there, then you know it would be a very sort of a drudge towards the end of the season. But that gives a real excitement to the players and the fans of those four clubs.
Yeah, and the championship as well is starting to look great.
Just going to come on to lots of Falkirk fans too, actually getting in touch tonight with Gary Holt. Then he spoke very well a couple of weeks ago. A lot of Falkirk fans saying what a fantastic job he's doing there, and the results just blew it wide open today.
Absolutely, they go top, and suddenly Dundee had a really poor result. Hamilton getting beat at home in ways that you wouldn't have expected. Suddenly, the greatest league in world football has opened up again.
Falkirk are the best team in the championship in terms of how they play. They've got a real style of play about them. They're young, they play a great system, and they're very comfortable in it. They're the best team that we've
Kenny,
faced
can I just,
this year.
Can I just go back to you're talking about the scrap at the bottom of the Premiership. I saw 45 minutes of Killy Cali Thistle before I came up here today. Kilmarnock play really good football under Alan Johnson, and it's no surprise to me that we've had a lot of Kilmarnock fans who repeatedly say they're appreciating the football. Now, you were talking about football under Tommy Wright and Partick Thistle. I mean, when I had to leave at half-time, they were 1-0 up, they wanted to know. They got quite an ovation, Kilmarnock, coming off the pitch at half-time because they play the game on the ground,
good players,
through their midfield.
He's a talented player.
And I thought, talking about coaches and playing style, there is a manager who is trying to get his team playing really attractive
football.
I think
when you take a job over, you go into a club and you set your players a system out and how you want to play in your philosophy. It might be back to front, I don't know. It might be playing for the back, or you might play 4-3-3, but you have to get in, you stamp your authority, you work in it day in, day out in terms of how you want to play your system, and then you hopefully take that onto the park on a Saturday.
Who's going to win the championship?
I've got a feeling that Falkirk will win it. I think they've got real good young players, they've got a wee bit of experience up front in Roberts and Loy. I would go for Falkirk.
Can I ask you, Paul, a question on air that I asked you in print a couple of days ago? Because this intrigues me. You've had 2.5 years, really good successive promotions at Alloa. When you see a stack of gifted Scottish managers who can't get work, what kind of risk have you taken saying, I'm going to make myself unemployed in order to try and get back in again?
A big risk. But I like working with you here on a Saturday night, Graham. So I thought I'd give it all up to come and see you.
A bit of bad news for Graham, that Tom English has gone freelance. So.
Worse than that, he's coming in here, I bet you.
Lots of Hearts fans getting in touch. Ian
Tim Trainor's coming back as well.
Ian and Edmund, I'm a Hearts fan, I'm unhappy with the manager. Alan Preston said this is a youth team. McDonald and Hamill 27, Wilson and McGowan 22, Robinson 21, hardly a youth side. And someone on Twitter, Roddy Elliott, do the recent results not suggest Locke is improving with experience? What is Michael Stewart's agenda with Hearts?
Listen, I don't have an agenda with anything. I just say what I think and what I see, and you know we're past halfway part of the season, and I don't really see there having been much progress. I think there has been a few good results recently, but again, I'll make the point. I think it's more by chance rather than design.
Just find that question for you, Paul, coming in on text. Can you ask Paul if he thinks it's possible to play passing football in the lower leagues as Rangers say it is not?
Well, we've done it for 2 years, but I sort of had to change my system this year in terms of how I played. But when I took the job over at Alloa, I wanted to play a certain system. I played a back four, and I played a diamond in the middle of the park. I played two up front, and what we tried to do was try and play for the back and play through the midfield and
it
playing forwards.
It did work.
Two seasons
running.
I think, yeah. I think if you're a midfielder, you don't want to see from going the ball going from back to front. You want to try and get involved in the play and play through
in
that.
The Championship as well, don't forget Livingston and Dumbarton are teams that can hurt people. So this will go, I think, to the last week, and we won't even know who's won it and who's going to be in the playoffs.
Well, that's it for tonight. Thanks to Paul Hartley, Graeme Spear, Stuart Cosgrove and Michael Stewart. Sports and Extras back next Saturday at 5:30.
The Scottish Football Podcast from BBC Radio Scotland.